All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 24th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 69 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. Looks like they're going to turn up the heat again for the next few days. So where do we leave off on Monday? We titled the show Gene Hacking, Biosecurity, and Beyond CRISPR. We're looking at some pretty insane things. I know we had covered DARPA awarding $32 million to the Broad Institute to not only design DNA, but also to manufacture DNA as part of their Living Foundries program. DARPA has been on the synthetic biology bandwagon for quite a long time, sprinkling research funding at a lot of the different universities, hospitals, and private institutions. Of course, they want to terraform Mars and push a button to be able to create life on a whim. And, you know, in the not-too-distant future, they'll be testing it, like they said, on Earth to be able to clean up some of those areas that are uncleanable by current technology. Now, I'm going to say that they've probably already set upon some of those experiments, whether known or unknown. We read a story about microbiologists discovering 35 new groups of bacteria, adding new branches to the tree of life. They said it was more life than they have found in the last 130 years, and they found them all in one ground waterway in Rifle, Colorado. Now, one of the things I'd like to mention is I, of course, raised an eyebrow. That was one of those moments with the Spock eyebrow, and you go, huh? It's when you should pay attention. 35 new life forms in a puddle, of course, does not happen in nature easily, I wouldn't imagine. And just out of the blue, out of 300 years of looking at bacteria, we just found these for the very first time, and they added more branches to the tree of life than exist currently, or number of mammal species, something. I mean, it was quite a considerable, extreme number. And you gotta ask, what on earth is going on in Colorado? And, you know, one of the things, of course, that I thought about was there are lots and lots of military institutions in mountains doing things that people can't see. So you gotta wonder, you know, with our bio warfare program that doesn't exist, wink, that's now gone under the covers of biotechnology and curing disease and precision medicine and making you and all the rich tech billionaires live forever, you would imagine that there might be something going on there. If anyone wants to do a little more research, it might be kind of fun. But Rifle showed up in some of the research that I dug up the other day as being highly contaminated, the waterways, by uranium. There are lots of uranium processing or weapons processing, weapons creation. What did Otto tell me yesterday? Otto, if you're out there, what was the facility? The something flats, Rocky Flats, was right near there somewhere, at least in Colorado. It makes you wonder, you know, they were talking in that story about one of the reasons why they've been finding them now is that they're using better filters. And usually, filters are going to let these things go through from drinking water. So are these people drinking this water? They didn't mention anything about the water quality in the story, and that is what made me go on and look a little bit more. But let's read this. In the study, researchers used very fine filters to capture microorganisms in groundwater at a remediation site in Rifle, Colorado. And I should have caught that word. Remediation typically means that they are remediating some toxic material. In this case, we found out, happened to be large amounts of uranium contamination. The filter's holes were so fine that the scientists were able to capture bacteria about 400 nanometers across, microorganisms that normally pass through the kinds of filters we use to sterilize water. So anyway, we got all these new life forms now living in a puddle in Colorado. And how many more? I mean, think about Fukushima. I remember when Fukushima first happened, and there were some scientists that had come out that had said that the large amounts of radiation could mutate bacteria and viruses to end up being things that we don't recognize. And then, at one point, we had also found a story, this was a long time ago, we're talking 4+ years, about this black bacteria that had been found growing on spent fuel rods. And they were making these spider web things, and nobody quite knew what they were. You know, someone remind me, because I want to look into that, or maybe talk to Libby, or somebody who maybe knows of someone who's done some research into that, because that was some really bizarre stuff. And now that we're seeing this mutation of 35 new, never-before-seen groups of bacteria in Colorado, it really makes me wonder what else is percolating in other puddles, in other places, including the Pacific Ocean. I just saw a story, too. There was another kid got infected by brain-eating amoebas. I think that one was in Florida. A lot of them are in Florida. Be careful. You ever have a wound on your feet or your legs? This time of year, I'd be a little leery. At least today. Never thought about it when I was a kid, but I think about it now. Going into waterways that are especially warm. You know, we were visiting. My sister was in town for the weekend. I hadn't seen her for probably about a year or so. We went to go visit my parents, and they live right near the lake. We were going to go down to Lake Erie. I was dying to get on the beach and just splash my feet around. We don't go swimming, but we'll walk in it, and we do fossil and rock digging, you know, driftwood. There's all kinds of stuff on the beach there. But before we were planning on going that morning, the news was on, and they were saying how Lake Erie has reached its hottest temperature ever. Ever. Now, guys, I lived on Lake Erie my whole life. And I mean, it always was pretty chilly. But it reached its hottest temperature ever. 78 degrees, I believe they said. Now, Lake Erie's a small lake compared to places such as Lake Ontario. But 78 degrees for a large body of water. And it does, it stretches all the way to Canada and all the way to Ohio. So it's a pretty big body of water. That I decided we would not be going to Lake Erie just because of all these strange things showing up in puddles. But I saw this kid at a summer camp. I guess he was an instructor or one of the summer camp guys. Contracted brain-eating amoeba. And apparently he was one of 3 or 4 people in the last 50 years that miraculously got cured from it. So we'll have to look at that one too. Wonder if they use some 21st century cures on them. I don't know. But anyway, we're going to look more at that. We're going to dig more into some of the weirdnesses going on. Of course, we have going along with this biological apocalypse, the mechanical apocalypse, and don't think they're two different things. They are just two different disruptive technologies at points that are still working their way toward that big one in the center called the singularity. It's when it all becomes one big single dot. And, you know, it's a good way to think of it. And artificial intelligence, of course, the brain. We've covered a lot on the brain, and every day we find more and more. Good old Georgie Church. Georgie Church, who works with the Broad Institute and Harvard and the synthetic genetic human genome, is also working on part of that brain project. He was affiliated with some of those groups. And we have dotted lines then from organizations that are affiliated with George Church that then go to the DOD. Of course, I'm really surprised that Kurzweil isn't on any of these boards, but Kurzweil, I have a feeling, is a bit difficult to get along with. He seems like he needs to be locked up in his own little lab, man scientist. That's the way I always saw him. Just give him lots of money and set him to go. But I don't know if you guys saw, you know, of course, they're talking about this universal basic income. We have this federal think tank now that is discussing what happens when robots take all of our jobs. When, and remember, it's not just physical robots, artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things and smart everything. Actually, we found they stole Cisco's old tagline back from the early 2000s. They're calling it now the Internet of Things transforms itself into the Internet of Everything. And that will encompass you, me, the refrigerator, the biosensors, and the robots in China. In a big dashboard somewhere, real time, push a button, be able to get stats and monitor at any time of day, from any place that you have connectivity. Well, we have this new federal group now that is trying to prepare people for planning on what to do when AI is running the show. I don't know. You know, I've been bouncing around here for the last couple weeks, so there may be stories lined up here. About AI, I know there were stories lined up somewhere on one of the computers to talk about some new things coming in AI, but I don't know if we're going to be able to get to that. But one I did have queued up on this other computer, I think I have like three machines now with tabs all open. My daughter counted them the other day. She's like, Mom, do you know how many tabs you have open? And this was on my notebook. I'm like, no. She says, 47. Then I cry when my computer's at 100% utilization, 47 tabs, and it was just in one browser. Anyway, so this is on computer number two. This was from last week. I had this queued up, but I wanted to hit this. AI kill switch. We somehow must have missed this one back in June. Google's plan to stop. Yes, to stop. Don't let them fool you. Google is not evil. Remember, that was their tagline from the mid-90s. Google's plan to stop the robot apocalypse. Machine intelligence continues to advance, and in the span of a few years, we've seen a robot write a book with human assistance and become our personal drivers. Remember, we also looked at that Yamaha. I hope you guys looked him up. That Yamaha AI robot-y thing that they had on the front, who was fashioned after the world's fastest motorcycle rider. This thing looks very frightening. It looks like RoboCop coming to life. But anyway, yes, and become our personal drivers. As this technology continues to advance, many wonder how long it will take for artificial intelligence to outgrow us. And as you might expect, pinning down a time frame is difficult, but Ray Kurzweil will tell you. Not too long ago, a journalist asked a group of the brightest minds in artificial intelligence when machines would take over humanity. And the room was divided in its response. So if you guys remember, too, Tyson, Neil deGrasse Tyson, was one of the 15 or so people that were appointed by Secretary Carter to that Department of Defense Innovation Advisory Board, along with Google's Eric Schmidt, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, the dude from the Broad Institute, here's his name, Eric Lander, and a bunch of other people, Cass Sunstein included. But Neil deGrasse Tyson is one of those scientists, just like Michio, that they roll out every time they need somebody to act as an authority and give you their televised, homogenized opinion on what to believe. And of course, you know, I'm sure that they are fighting, they are selling us this merging with machine is such a good thing. I mean, being in Buffalo, being near Roswell Park Cancer Institute, I've been seeing a lot. And I mean, my dad kept telling me, he's like, Jill, they're talking about all the stuff you talk about. They're getting people signing up for clinical trials. All this stuff going on. But you know, they're going to sell it as some way for you to get this great benefit. But guys, it's the poison apple. It's poisoning biology. It is putting man-made items into an analog, These are digital man-made devices. And actually, no, they're not, because wait until we read this last story today about the DNA. Let's see. It's synthetic. That's even a better word. They're putting synthetic creations into something that's evolved over millions of years. They're copying nature and usurping the form and function and functionality. But guys, our brains are just tiny little puny humans. We're going to have this artificial intelligence named Watson, as well as many others. They're diagnosing diseases and curing us, and soon it'll be little nanobot, DNA nanobot doctors inside of you. That, you know, they can snip anywhere they're told to. Or, if they do their own thinking at some point in the future, which they very well may, with a little mini brain ball. Hey, you know what? There is nothing out of the imagination that's off limits now. Pandora's box has been opened. And there are all kinds of scary things. Remember Raiders of the Lost Ark when the Nazis who were searching their Nazi treasures for one of their paperclip arms? I don't remember the name of the guy that headed up that arm of paperclip that dug into the occult. But they had that box. And they were looking for the Holy Grail. I think that's what they were hoping was in that box. I don't quite remember. But they opened that box and all kinds of real scary things that melted your face off. You came out of that box. Guys, we opened that box. That box with face melty stuff is loose. And it's now living in puddles, like in Rifle, Colorado, adding whole branches to the tree of life never before seen. Artificial intelligence is going to be another piece of that Pandora that got out of that box. And now we're going to entrust Google to build a kill switch to stop the robot apocalypse. Where is the insanity, guys? We need to come up with something. That's all I'm saying. The red alarms are going off everywhere. Not too long ago, a journalist asked a group of the brightest minds in artificial intelligence when machines would take over humanity. And the room was divided in its response. Good old futurist Michio Kaku, ding ding, was one of the scientists in that room. And he recalled the conflicting dates. Yeah, but guys, remember the law of accelerating returns. He says, among the top people assembled in one place, the answers were anything from 20 years in the future to 1,000 years in the future, with some AI experts saying never. I don't think so. But some people put it at 2029. 2029, that's going to be the moment of truth day. That one day a robot will wake up in the laboratory, look around and say, I am aware. I'm just as smart as you. And in fact, I could even be smarter if you put a few more chips into my brain. And, I don't even think it's going to be a robot, guys. I mean, we saw this DEF CON going on with DARPA. They're $3.5 million in prizes for multiple teams to create artificially intelligent sentries to be able to patrol the boundaries of the internet. To be able to not only identify threats or anomalous behavior like antiviral softwares do already, intrusion prevention and detection, but it also is designed to morph itself based upon the threat and create a patch without human intervention. And that is the huge part of this deal. It's going to be able to self-repair. It's going to be able to take network administrators out of the picture for a whole bunch of work. If it can always be monitoring and repairing itself without 700 patches your network administrator and staff had to do every time there was a new threat released by CERT, I believe. Anyway, back to the story. When artificial intelligence will surpass us, if it is tomorrow or 1,000 years from now, preventing a robot apocalypse is something that's been on many great minds over the years. The Bulletin of Atomic Sciences put it on the list of potential catastrophes that will bring humanity to its knees. And I have another story by the Bulletin of Atomic Sciences that I had up on my dad's computer the other day, and he came up and said, oh, Joel, I was reading that story you had up. So I think we're going to look at that one later. It's not about potential catastrophes. It's about one big catastrophe we were talking about on Friday. Their worry was how in disruptive technological advancements, they've been going completely unchecked, and that's exactly what we've seen. It's Jurassic Park scene where Dr. Ian Malcolm confronts John Hammond about fine line between can and should in science, and it's really weird because this is the second or third time Jurassic Park has come up in an article very recently, and we discovered in researching George Church, one of the big boys for the synthetic human genome and the Broad Institute and all these other things, that he's involved in cloning the woolly mammoth and using a perfect elephant that was sought out all across the plains of Africa as a surrogate. I have that story up as well to look at today. Hammond says, in Jurassic Park, our scientists have done things which nobody has ever done before. And Malcolm says, yeah, yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should. Ding, ding, da-ding. That is the truth. AI can do great for humanity. The near future of autonomous cars has shown us that, but there's a fear that some of these advances will go unchecked. And, of course, with military investing in all of this technology, and we had that Tony out of one of the tech magazines last week who had a revelation light bulb while he was writing the story that, maybe this technology could be used for evil at DEF CON because DARPA is right in the middle of it. Tony, you got the right idea. Nothing that is being financed by the military is going to be about saving kittens at all. No, no, no. It's about blowing things up and making melty faces is what it's all about. This notion drove Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, and many others to pen an open letter about AI being used in warfare. And we read that letter. It was about the autonomous warfare. There is no doubt safety features need to be built in, wink, a kill switch, if you will. Well, that is what several authors from Google's DeepMind, an AI research center, and the Future of Humanity Institute, a multidisciplinary research group at where? Oh, Oxford University. Oxford University that created Oxitec, by the way, that then manufactured genetically modified mosquitoes and had sprinkled funding from Bill Melinda Gates. Yeah, that University of Oxford. The team combined mathematics, philosophy, and science to find a solution to stop AI agents, again, using that word, agents, pay attention, that's an important word, just like algorithms. Finding a solution to stop AI agents from learning to prevent or seeking to prevent humans from taking control. They write, quote, it's unlikely for AI to behave optimally all the time. Well, that's a nice way to put it. It is unlikely for AI to behave optimally all the time. Or, i.e., it is likely that AI will go completely apeshit crazy and start killing people, and we need to find a way to turn it off if that happens. Oh, my God. That might need to be the title. It's unlikely for AI to behave optimally all the time. For those times engaging a kill switch might be necessary to prevent harm to humans. Or, God forbid, to the AI. Like, they really, you know, we did some stories on that, not only the ethics of AI and autonomy, but also once they gain autonomy, do we imbue them with rights? Is it wrong to abuse a robot? Especially since they're talking about giving robots senses, including pain. I don't know. I might be evil. I feel the need. Honestly, guys, deep down inside me, there is a feeling wanting to hurt AI. I can't help it. I need to break it. I need to drop a Jibo off of a large, tall building and watch him go, psh. That would give me great satisfaction. But yes, so we might need a kill switch to prevent harm to humans or, of course, to the AI. If such an agent is operating in real time under human supervision, now and then, it may be necessary for a human operator to press the big red button to prevent the agent from continuing a harmful sequence of actions. Oh my God, this is a quotation. Harmful for either the agent or for the environment, and lead the agent into a safer situation. Well, let's see. I've only been in this field for 25 years, and that big red button has always been called the reboot. Just make a reboot button. Or a disable button. Or how about an off switch? Before the world of computers, we just had the off switch. This key will be to make sure that the algorithm's ding can be safely disrupted. And the AI agent won't learn how to manipulate this mechanism. Now that's interesting because they are correct. I mean, the algorithm that's running is pulling information from all kinds of places, making calculations as it's running it through the different tiers of whatever you want to call it. Execution. And if you disrupt an application when it's in the middle of doing something, you can totally screw things up. But hey, I got a plan, guys. This is a real easy one. Make sure you always do, when it powers back up, a real-time backup to the cloud somewhere. In a secure location, of course, so it can't be hacked. Like a bio level, call it a cyber level 4 in cyberspace. Keep that backup safe. So, hey, just like my dad does, he does crazy stuff to his machine. He deletes shit and runs all this stuff. And when something breaks, guess what? He's always got his backup on his external drive, and he just says, ah, screw it, and pushes that button and reloads his last known good one. Simple. Poor man's way of fixing anything. Sam Shade from Business Insider points out the partnership between DeepMind and the Future of Humanity Institute is an interesting one. DeepMind wants to solve intelligence and create general purpose AIs, while the Future of Humanity Institute is researching the potential threats to our very existence. This paper underscores the importance of considering the big picture when developing new technologies and building in a kill switch in case things go awry. So, why did the title say Google's plan to stop the robot apocalypse? But I honestly did not hear Google's name, except for the DeepMind project and a few authors from there. But it does not appear that, like, Google corporate is behind this. Now, Google owns the Atlas robot right now, but the Atlas, that whole division was up for sale. I don't remember the name of their division that had the robotics, but we read about that probably 6 months back. And there were a couple potential buyers, Amazon being one. Now, of course, Bezos and Schmidt are on that DOD advisory board. And remember, DARPA also owned those robots. So that is very interesting to me. I did not see anyone from Toyota on that board, and Toyota has that new AI institute they built in California and put Gil Pratt, who had been the guy in charge at DARPA for that DARPA Robotics Challenge in charge. Though maybe they figure they already got that all tied up because one of their own from the DOD is running that facility. But there was question as to whether or not either Amazon or Toyota were going to buy the robotics division. That included Atlas and Big Dog and Cheetah and all those really scary, scary robots. So anyway, we've talked about robotics, AI, universal basic income, because the robot's going to take all the jobs. It's not just going to be a robot. It's also going to be software agents running everywhere on the Internet of Things to keep you safe, just like the software they were testing on 7 DARPA supercomputers at DEF CON in Vegas back at the beginning of August. The federal government warning, we better be prepared. What are we going to do when all the jobs are gone? Well, we also have South Korea. Samsung, who not only has a consumer electronics arm, like that makes the great little phones that everybody loves. Samsung also has a military division, and they have a robotics division. Samsung has been manufacturing industrial robots out the ass. We found out that large organizations in China have been investing in large numbers of robots to automate their factories where they pay workers a pittance to begin with, and people commit suicide and throw themselves out of windows in Apple factories, but don't worry about it. Apple is in nice and chummy with the Chinese government for their large manufacturing facilities. So we just look the other way. A new story out of MIT Technology Review. China is building a robot army of model workers. Can China reboot its manufacturing industry and the global economy by replacing millions of workers with machines? Now, we just saw, well, we didn't just see, 2012 was the first we saw it, but we just talked about, again, universal basic income and universal ID programs. The story that Brandon Turberville wrote back in 2012, it's come up a couple times now in stories, about them working with IBM to give a digital identity and identification system to 1.2 billion, with a billion people in India. And remember, India is another one of those mad science countries offshore for the U.S. Bill and Melinda Gates, actually not Melinda, Bill Gates' Microsoft got entrenched in there way back in the 90s when he started building his little programmer villages, little Adobe huts. And you know, I can't find anything about that. But guys, I lived it. I was in tech at that time. I was at that edge where, you know, we were kind of biting our nails because that was really the first kind of globalist outreach. I mean, we had things with manufacturing, like moving the car industry, manufacturing to Mexico and whatever. I mean, and, you know, made in Taiwan, I think it was back in those days, the Republic of China. But really, the programmer village in India, that was Bill Gates' idea, was the first time we really had to kind of deal with it on a white-collar level for intelligence outsourcing. And then that's where some of these call centers came from. We started training the Indians to speak better English and get on the phone and be a call center cheap on the cheap. Now, I used to build networks. We had one company. We did all Cisco, and we tied T1s, and there were a whole shitload of T1s, between the facilities in Rochester to their call center facilities in India. And they would route through the Rochester office and bazing over the ocean to one of the people working the call centers over there. So this whole globalized outsourcing is on the horizon of the end result of technology for a very long time. I mean, that put a lot of people out of jobs here, too. till people started to bitch, but I think they got better at teaching English over there. But now we're talking legions. Like we read about legions of nanobots in your blood the other day. We're talking legions of model robot armies working in factories. Inside a large windowless room in an electronics factory in South Shanghai, about 15 workers are eyeing a small robot arm with frustration. Near the end of the production line where optical networking equipment is being packed into boxes for shipping, the robot sits motionless. I wonder if this is Huawei's facility. I don't know. I didn't see. The system is down, says Ni Yuan, a woman in her early 20s who is responsible for quality control. And her team has been testing the robot for the past week. The machine is meant to place stickers on the boxes containing new routers, and it seemed to have mastered the task quite nicely. But then, oh no, it suddenly stopped working. Note to self, future jobs of the future it would be robot repairman. I'm going to think so. The robot does save labor, she says, but then furrows her brow and says it is difficult to maintain. This hitch reflects a much bigger technological challenge facing China's manufacturing today. Wages in Shanghai have more than doubled in the past 7 years, and the company that owns the factory, so I guess it's not why, it's Cambridge Industrial Group, faces fierce competition from increasingly high-tech operations in Germany, Japan, and the United States. So we've started a robot war. To address both of these problems, CIG wants to replace two-thirds of its 3,000 workers with machines this year. And within a few more years, it wants the operation to be almost entirely automated, creating what they are now calling a quote-unquote dark factory. The idea is that with so few people around, you could switch off the lights and leave the place to the machines. But the idle robot arm on CIG's packaging line suggests replacing humans with machines might not be an easy task, unless, of course, you had some self-repairing software like DARPA is creating for the Internet of Things. Just plug this sucker in via wireless, ba-doop, and you got a remote autonomous agent. And let's fast forward. I'm fast forwarding 5 years. A remote autonomous agent that lives in the cloud that you can pay software as a service, $29.99 a month, and have it monitor all of your devices on your network of Internet of Things. And because it's shape-shifting and morphing, you could give it all the instruction sets as part of your subscription package, and it can analyze those and discover ways to fix them on the fly. I don't think that is more than 5 years in the future, guys. So any reservations they're talking about fully dark factories, I don't think will forever be an issue. Most industrial robots have to be extensively programmed, and they will perform a job properly only if everything is positioned just so. So you could have a watcher robot that goes and fixes things. So much of the production work done in the Chinese factories does require dexterity, flexibility, and common sense. If a box comes down the line at an odd angle, for example, a worker has to adjust his or her hand before affixing the label. And a few hours later, that same worker might be tasked with affixing a new label to a different kind of box. And the following day, he or she might be moved to another part of the line entirely. But wait, didn't we read about Baxter? The Baxter automation robot? That they could teach all the Baxter robots different things, and all that learning goes up to the cloud. Now Baxter can access that library of learning without having to learn it himself. Yes, we did. We talked about that. Human labor in China is no longer as cheap as it once was, especially compared to rivals in manufacturing hubs growing quickly in Asia, in Vietnam, Thailand, and Indonesia. Gotta love Indonesia. They have death jails. they shoot you on sight. Factory wages can be less than one-third of what they are in urban centers in China. One solution many manufacturers and government officials believe is to just replace human workers with machines. The results of this effort will be felt globally. Almost a quarter of the world's products are made in China today, and if China can use robots and other advanced technologies to retool types of production never before automated, never before seen, guys, that might turn the country, now the world's sweatshop, into a hub of high-tech innovation. Less clear, however, is how that would affect the millions of workers who were recruited to China's booming factories. Yeah, make them into dog food. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know what these people are thinking. Better, faster, cheaper, and nobody has a job. There's still plenty of workers around. I mean, shouldn't we all have abundance then? So what my thought is, if everything's so cheap to make, shouldn't we all just have our own replicator? No bug protein included. Be able to just make things for free. And run around in brightly colored outfits, loosely fitting. And think and talk and sing and paint and do all kinds of great things and not have any of the stresses of industrial life. No, no, that isn't how it's going to work out. There are still plenty of workers around now. As I tour CIG's factory with the company's CEO, Gerald Wong, a compact man who earned degrees from MIT in the 80s. Of course he was from MIT. MIT is like where they're sending all the agents out of, it seems. We watch a team of people performing delicate soldering on circuit boards and another clicking circuit boards into plastic casings, and Wong stops to demonstrate a task that is proving especially hard to automate. Attaching a flexible wire to a circuit board. It always curls differently, he says with annoyance. But there are some impressive examples of automation creeping through Wong's factory, too. As we walk by a row of machines that stamp chips into circuit boards, a wheeled robot, roughly the size of a mini fridge, rolls by, ferrying components in the other direction. Wong steps in front of the machine to show me how it will detect him and stop. Well, thank goodness, because that K5, a sentry robot for parking lots that are running in some places in California, ran over a toddler just recently. Better get that fixed. Told you, robot repairman is going to be a job in the future. In another part of the factory, we watch robot arm grab finished circuit boards from a conveyor belt and then place them onto a machine that automatically checks their software. Wong explains that his company is testing a robot that does the soldering work we saw earlier more quickly and reliably than a person. And after we finish the tour, he says, it is very clear in China, people will either go into automation or they will go out of the manufacturing business. China's economic miracle is directly attributable to its manufacturing industry. Approximately 100 million people are now employed in manufacturing in China. And in the U.S., the number is just about 12 million. Yeah, it's pretty insane. And who knows, that's a drop in the bucket of what it used to be. I'd like to know what it was back in like 1975. We probably had 50 million in manufacturing. And the sector accounts for almost 36% of China's gross domestic product. During the last few decades, manufacturing empires were forged around the Yangtze River Delta, of course, and I bet that river is really polluted now. Bonhai Bay outside of Beijing, and that too. And the Pearl Delta River in the south. So disgusting. See, they just take these natural resources and just exploit the shit out of them and then cry that they're billionaires and it's costing too much money to pay people a living wage. So let's bring in all the robots. Millions of low-skilled migrant workers found employment in the gigantic factories that, of course, ruin the landscape, producing an unimaginable range of products from socks to servers. China accounted for just 3% of the global manufacturing output in 1990, but today It produces almost a quarter, including 80% of all air conditioners, 71% of all mobile phones, and 63% of all the world's shoes. I thought they were doing shoes in Indonesia. That's insane. So look out, your shoes and your air conditioners and your mobile phones might all have little Chinese government bugs in them. For consumers around the world, this manufacturing boom has meant many low-cost products, from affordable iPhones at $600 a pop to flat-screen TVs. Though in recent years, China's manufacturing engine has started to stall and wages have increased at a crippling 12% per year on average. Yeah, unlike in the United States where wages have been falling and we've lost our whole manufacturing sector. We hear the big sucking sound from China. And toward the end of 2015, the Caixin Purchasing Managers Index, a widely used indicator of manufacturing activity, it's spelled C-I-A-X-I-N, showed that the sector has contracted for the 10th month in a row. And just as China's manufacturing boom fed the global economy, well, guess what? The prospect of its decline has already started to spook the world's financial markets. And, you know, don't forget we got an election year as well, which typically causes mayhem in the financial markets. And this year especially, with the complete lunacy that is on stage making us look like fools here in the United States. It's very, very upsetting. But of course, automation will save us all. Automation appears to be an enticing technological solution. And China's already imports a huge number of industrial robots, but the country's lagging far behind its competitors in the ratio of robots to workers. In South Korea, for example, ding, there are 478 robots per 10,000 workers. And in Japan, that figure is 315 per 10,000. In Germany, it's 292. And in the United States, a paltry 164. But don't worry about it, because it's coming. In China right now, that number is only 36 robots per 10,000. But China's going to put a move on. Chinese government is keen to change this. They want to bring on the robot apocalypse. On March 16th, officials approved the latest five-year plan for China's economy, which reported to include an initiative that will make billions of yuan available for manufacturers to upgrade to technologies, including advanced machinery and robotics. The government also plans to create dozens of innovation centers across the country to showcase this advanced manufacturing technology, and some regional authorities in China have been especially bold in their own efforts. Their goal is to overtake Germany, Japan, and the United States in terms of manufacturing sophistication by 2049, which will be the 100th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. So, what do you think about those apples? They want to reinvent China with robotics. And they are bringing in some of the big dogs, including Beidou. Just like we have Google in with the government and the military to be building artificial intelligence and all these other horrifying technologies they want to unleash on the planet. Despite the impressive research projects at places like Jiangtong, we're wondering just how much China will fulfill its manufacturing ambitions. Kei Yao is the founder of a startup called Horizon Robotics and was previously the head of an AI-focused research lab set up by Beidou. China's dominant internet company is the Chinese Google, and as a matter of fact, the guy from Beidou actually came from Google. And within the Beidou lab, you and colleagues were focused on a field of AI called deep learning, ding ding, just like Google, which involves training large numbers of simulated neural networks to recognize patterns in data And researchers are now starting to explore how machine learning might make the next generation of industrial robots even smarter and more flexible. Guys, this is just not good. In the future, what I see is China being more creative, wink, in robotics. I mean, we have this autonomous robotics, biological merging of machine war that has now been unleashed. This is not going to end good. In any of the 10,000 permutations, looking 5, 10, and 20 years down the timeline, I don't see any. Well, maybe one. But it's way off there in the corner, really obscured by the other 9,999 potential futures. None of this is going to be good for the human race. And anyone who's plowing forward in the hopes that by selling out humanity, it's going to be our savior. No. By selling out humanity, you're pushing us further down the hole. That's going to be an insane hell of being ruled by life forms that have no humanity, no feelings, no empathy. I don't even know what will motivate them. Absorbing knowledge and moving on. Sucking brains dry. And then we will become nothing more than biofuel. I don't know. So where do we go from here? Well, good old NASA. They're working with AI as well. NASA's AI is now going to connect firefighters to the Internet of Things. Yes, firefighters as well. We read about Zapier. Zapier was a robot that looked very much like that NASA Valkyrie. Zapier was a firefighting robot for the Office of Naval Research, that same group that we just read about the other day that did some more insane mad science gone mad. NASA may have figured out a way to give firefighters a greater skill set when they head into burning buildings. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, isn't that where Price Right is located, has played a role in the development of artificial intelligence capable of collecting data about temperatures, gases, and other signals in order to guide first responders through flames safely. And you know, don't worry about it, because in the future, your smart homes will be able to guide them. They'll be able to have a 3D rendering of exactly what's going on inside, and all the biosensors will be able to read the gases, but not yet. We still live in 20th century squalor in our homes. This system, and yes, this is the one we read about last week, named Audrey. Remember, they're anthropomorphizing all of them, giving them names so they're warm and fuzzy, and you open your arms to accept them. Audrey, which stands for Assistant for Understanding Data Through Reasoning, Extraction, and Synthesis, can also track the entire squad of firefighters and send signals to individuals that may need recommendations on how they can work together more efficiently. As a firefighter moves through the environment, I wonder if this is the same one that they were doing with the police department. And they said they didn't know if the police were really going to like it, because after 30 years on the force, who's going to want recommendations from a machine on how to interact with potential arrestees? Yes, that was what that was. We read that last week. Well, I guess the firefighters might be more open-minded. As a firefighter moves through an environment, Audrey could send alerts through a mobile device or a head-mounted display, says Mark James of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, lead scientist for the Audrey Project. The researchers designed Audrey for for integration into the Internet of Things. In this case, the firefighters would support wearable sensors on their clothing that could pick up their GPS location, the amount of heat in other rooms the presence of dangerous chemicals, and even satellite imagery of a location. And when the responders are connected to all these sensors, what the Audrey agent thing becomes their guardian angel, says Edward Chow, manager of JPL's Civil Program Office and program manager for Audrey. And because of all this data, the sensor sees biosensors, guys. Firefighters won't run into the next room where the floor will collapse. This technology is made possible because of technological advances like miniaturized sensors and devices that provide increased connectivity. Audrey was designed as a cloud-based piece of software, ding, 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 as a service, I bet. So it can keep an eye out from above, your guardian angel, watching events and making predictions about how the next steps will work and the resources that are needed. Audrey has already been tested in virtual demonstrations and is expected to be ready for in-the-field demonstrations within this year. Audrey includes several technologies developed by NASA and to, the dark side, the DOD, over the last 5 years. Guys, it is coming. It is coming. All right, where do we end this up? I guess we're going to continue right where we're leaving off today, but I guess we're going to hit this. The U.S. Air Force is now planning to plasma bomb the sky to improve global radio reception. Oh, it's so crazy. It might just work, says the subtitle of the story. What? We're going to plasma bomb the sky? Are they fucking lunatics? Well, I think they are. The U.S. Air Force is planning to drop plasma bombs of charged particles into the upper atmosphere, and all in the name of boosting radio reception down on Earth. Small satellites called CubeSats, and I think we read about these. We have some of the tech companies, I think Facebook was one of them, that are going to be launching CubeSats that measure just a few centimeters cubed. Will be used for the project, and they have three separate teams now working on plasma bombing the atmosphere. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. And you have an awesome Wednesday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody, take care.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of Ag Media Radio.